Well, good morning. It's good to be here with you. Ricky began with asking you with a show of hands, so I'm going to carry on that theme. So if you want to raise your hand if you're an early bird. A night owl? A permanently exhausted pigeon? I think that's my favourite. Are you a glass half full person? A glass half empty? That wasn't quite so. Are you a big picture person? Or are you a detail person? Okay, again, some of those not quite. People not willing to commit, maybe it's a bit of both and. So what about God? Is God a big picture person or is God a detail person? Of course, he's both. See this in Psalm 19 that begins with a description of the wonder of creation. The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display his craftsmanship. That big picture view. But it goes on to speak about the way in which he's given detailed instructions, which are also perfect, that those are there for our benefit. Psalm 19, verse 7. The instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. And then the psalm ends by speaking of our response to God, this God that is great and mighty, but also interested in the detail. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. We see God in the wonder and the majesty of creation, and we've reflected a little bit on that as Chris showed those different animals earlier, but also in the detail and the care and the order and the guidance that he gives to us as his people. The detail that we read about in the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, was a way of showing the Israelites, God's people, how to live. The book of Proverbs is another way of showing what this looks like in practice. And it can help us as we seek to faithfully follow God. Looking at what it means for us as God's people, of us as the body of Christ here today in Eastleigh in the 21st century. As you've been looking at this over the past few weeks, you've seen that the key to life is knowing God, is putting your trust in him. You've seen that an abundant life isn't about the stuff that you own, but rather it comes from that relationship with God. And then last week you looked at that call to faithfulness, both in our relationships with one another, but also in our relationship with God. Through all of this, through all that you're looking at, the question at the heart is, what does it look like to faithfully follow God? And we're going to look this morning at some examples from everyday life, because God is interested in the way in which we live. God is interested in the way in which we relate to one another. Paul, writing to the church in Rome, put it this way in Romans 12. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Or as Eugene Peterson paraphrases it in The Message. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embrace what God does for you as the best thing that you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. As we look at some examples from this chapter of Proverbs this morning, we'll see that it's not a tick list, do this, 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 and then this will happen. But rather it's a description of some of the attitudes that we should have as we seek to faithfully follow God. And there are three things that we're going to see this morning, those three attitudes that we're to have. One is an attitude of humility. One is an attitude of being active, of playing a part, of making a difference. And the third is to be a builder, an encourager, someone who builds up rather than knocks down. So the first attitude, that of humility, being prepared to admit when you've got it wrong. Robert Alter, an Old Testament scholar, paraphrases the first five verses of Proverbs 6 like this. My son, if you stood pledge for your fellow man, gave your handshake to a stranger, you've been ensnared by your mouth saying, trapped by your mouth sayings. Do this then, my son, and escape, for you have fallen into your fellow man's grasp. Go grovel and pester your fellow man. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Escape like the deer from the hunter and the bird from the fowler's hands. It's not saying that we shouldn't lend or borrow money. It's not saying that we shouldn't make vows. Deuteronomy 23 talks about some of the restrictions and some of the guidance on that. But what Proverbs 6 here is talking about is the way in which we shouldn't be quick to make rash promises. And if we do, then we need to do all that we can to get out of that commitment, even if it means, as one commentator put it, eating humble pie. So do this, my son, to free yourself, since you have fallen into your neighbor's hands. Go to the point of exhaustion and give your neighbor no rest. Do this then, my son, and escape, for you have fallen into your fellow man's grasp. Go grovel and pester your fellow man. The issue isn't about making commitments, but rather when we make a mistake that we're to own up to it. When we realize that we can't follow through on what we've committed to, then we're to own up to that, to confess, and to do all that we can to put it right. So counter-cultural. Where the expectation or the norm is quite simply to cover it up and hope that we get away with it. But we're to be those that own up and put right what was wrong. That's what these opening verses of Proverbs are talking about. There was a prestigious American law company. They were interviewing for another member of staff to come and join their team. One of the partners that was on the panel interviewing asked this young man to give an example of his personal integrity. So he thought for a moment and then he said, well, when I was at law school, I had to borrow $100,000 in order to get through my course. So I asked my dad to co-sign for the amount, which he did. And after winning my first case, after my first case, I paid that amount. The partners looked at each other, seemingly very impressed with the way in which this young man had acted with integrity and paid off his debt as soon as he was able. And they were just about to offer him the job when one of them said, oh, could you just explain a little bit about that case? How come it was that you were able to pay off that £100,000? Oh, the young man replied, That was the case where my dad sued me to get his money back. We're to be humble, ready to admit when we've got things wrong, where we've entered into agreements that we can't keep, and we're to do all that we can to put them right. So the first attitude is one of humility. The next attitude considers that of being active. The writer zooming in and looking at the ant. Now, not one of the smallest creatures that we know, yet one whose organization and activity has fascinated people for thousands of years. The writer says this: "Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief, and scarcity like an armed man." A number of years ago, I did an MA, and for my dissertation, I looked at complexity theory and leadership in Baptist churches. And as part of that study of complexity theory, believe it or not, I looked at ants. And the temptation was very great this morning to read you part of my dissertation. I thought, I've got a captive audience. That doesn't often happen, that I've got a captive audience that I could read to you my dissertation, but I resisted. You'll be glad to hear. But the thing is about ants, and as the writer of Proverbs picks up here, there is no hierarchy. There is a so-called queen, the one who gives birth to all the ants in the colony, and as such, she is protected by the others, but she's not in charge. The complexity and the order of the colony comes not from one person directing everyone else what to do, but from each individual playing their part. Each individual ant doing what they were created to do. It's very much a bottom-up rather than a top-down structure. Just as each ant has a part to play in the life of the colony, so each of you here has a part to play in the life of Eastleigh Baptist Church, and more widely than that, in God's plans and purposes. These verses aren't simply a warning of the danger of laziness, but rather they're a reminder, a picture of when we each do what God calls us to do, then something wonderful will emerge. Read earlier from Romans 12. I'll come back to that now. The next verses. Paul says, "Because of the privilege and authority God has given me, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you are better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith that God has given us. Just as our bodies have many parts, and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body. We all belong to each other. In his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you are a teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, then take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift for showing kindness to others, then do it gladly." But so often within us, there is something of a struggle, there is something of a resistance. Stephen Pressfield, in his book, The War of Art, says this: "Most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life that is within us. Between the two stands resistance. It's that resistance that the writer to Proverbs is talking about here. So often we leave it to others to step up. But if we go back to the image of the colony of ants, the order, the creativity comes not just or doesn't come from a few highly intelligent or a few highly busy ants doing their thing. But each ant is involved. A colony of a few hundred ants will very quickly die out. But one of 500,000 ants, where each is involved, where each is playing their part, leads to structure, it leads to security, it leads to a longevity of that whole colony. If we go back to that passage in Romans, we see that each of us has got a different role to play in God's kingdom, a different role to play in the life of the church here. The key thing isn't that everybody does everything, but that everybody does something. That you do what you're called to do. That you do what you're called to do. That, and so on. If each of us does what we're called to do in the life of the church, then God will be able to do incredible things. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward." We're all called to be involved, to be an ant and not a sluggard, to be humble, yes, to admit when we've got things wrong, and then finally, to be a builder. Proverbs 6, verse 12. "A troublemaker and a villain, who goes about with a corrupt mouth, who winks maliciously with his eye, signals with his feet, and motions with his fingers, who plots evil with deceit in his heart. He always stirs up conflict. Therefore, disaster will overtake him in an instant. He will suddenly be destroyed without remedy." There are six things that the Lord hates. Seven that are detestable to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, and a person who stirs up conflict in the community. A rather sharp warning there about those who stir up dissent and conflict. But if we turn that around, it's a call to be those who build, those who unite, those who encourage, those who build up rather than tear down. In the news this week was the story of the Crooked House pub. Now, whatever has happened and the rights and wrongs of it, the pub has literally been torn down. Whereas with time and effort and energy, it could have been rebuilt. This call to build that we see here in Proverbs 6 is again echoed in Romans 12. As Paul looks at what it means to be God's people, what it means to be a church. Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Rejoice in our confident hope. Be patient in trouble and keep on praying. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. And you can read on with some of those other attitudes that are called for us. We are called to love, to honor, to rejoice, to be patient, to help, to bless, to live in harmony, to build up rather than tear down. Three attitudes in this passage in Proverbs that we are to have as we seek to faithfully follow the ways of the Lord in today's society. To be humble, to admit when we've got it wrong, and do all that we can to make it right. To be active, to play our part in the life of God's kingdom and in the life of the church here. And to be those that build up rather than tear down. Let's take a moment to be still. I want us to reflect on those three attitudes. I've got three questions. Where do you need to be humble and put something right? Maybe even this morning before you leave this building. Where do you need to play an active role in the life of the church when previously you might have been content to be a spectator? And where do you need to stop criticizing and tearing down and begin to encourage and build up? Lord, we ask that you would help us, each of us, that we might place before you our ordinary everyday life, our sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and to place it before you as an offering. Help us to embrace all that you have for us, that we would fix our lives and our attention on you. Where we have got things wrong, help us to put them right. Where we have been slow to respond to what you have been saying to us, help us to be obedient. Where we have been quick to criticize and tear down, help us to encourage and build up. We ask that as we focus on you, as we seek first you and your kingdom, that you will continue to change us from the inside. That you will bring the best out of us as individuals and as the church here in Eastleigh. We ask this so that you and you alone would be honoured and glorified. Amen.